You will see the Bible come alive as you see the centuries unfold before your eyes. Dr. Dorothy C. Youngblood, co-founder of Conservative Theological University, will present a 7,000-year world history and Bible timeline revealing God's world history, past, present, and future. Recommended for pastors, Christian school teachers, Bible students, and homeschoolers. The date is August 27th from 9 till 3. $99 includes syllabus, lecture, and light lunch. To register, call 1-800-GO-BIBLE. 1-800-GO-BIBLE.
Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you that telephone number is 904-831-0917. 904-831-0917. Your telephone call goes directly through to the studios, right to our microphones, so that we can entertain your question, comment, dialogue, and discussion. We have as our very special guest today, Congressman Mike Hill, representative of District 1 for the state of Florida, former representative for that district, and now candidate to be elected for that district. We're looking forward to God's giving him victory in this election coming up in the next few days. Some counties have already started the early voting, and so I pray that you will stay tuned and make that determination of what God would have you to do. And our holding, locking arms with Congressman Hill, holding him up before the Lord in prayer, and supporting him in our time and ability with finances, and also with whatever we can do with boots on the ground, if you please. Congressman Hill, before the break, we were talking about this article. Pennsylvania woman arrested at doctor's office declined care over her refusal to wear a face mask. She's 62 years old. She had been trying to get in to see her doctor. This article further says she's from Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, would not leave as requested after she refused to wear a mask. COVID-19 face mask, which is required at the Hypertension and Kidney Specialties Center in Lancaster. Hypertension and Kidney Specialties is an independent practice with an office on the Pennsylvania Medicine Lancaster General Health Subdivision Suburban Pavilion property. At the request of the office manager at the Hypertension and Kidney Specialist, East Hampton Township Police removed Barton from the building. According to the criminal complaint, she was taken in a wheelchair, put in a squad car, driven to the police department to be fingerprinted and photographed. On the way to the police station, the car rounded a corner, and Barton fell on her side and hit her head on the car door. The officer looked in the rearview mirror, saw she was gone, and said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, I'm fine." Then I went to get myself up, and I'm like, "No, no, no, I can't. I'm not fine. I can't even get up." Her back is compromised due to spinal stenosis, and with her hands still cuffed behind her back in a wheelchair in the squad car, she was unable to pull herself up. They pulled off the road to let me get back in the cruiser, put me back in the cruiser, she said. After she was processed at the police department, Barton was released and told the charges would arrive in the mail. She was charged with defiant criminal trespass, a misdemeanor, and should appear in court in September. This wasn't Barton's first confrontation with medical office staff, who told her she couldn't see her providers unless she wore a mask. According to the Epoch Times published report, March of 2022, Barton struggled to receive medical care throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. She is unable to wear a mask due to her childhood trauma stemming from an assault during which she nearly suffocated. Barton has been banned from all Pennsylvania medical facilities since February 2022 because of her mask refusal. Since then, she's not been able to see a doctor nor her prescriptions refilled. Her pacemaker must be checked every 4 months, but hasn't been looked at in over 2 years. However, she's tried to be seen from her longtime doctors. She's not sure where else to turn. When she really needs medical care in recent months, Barton has called her former doctor's offices and tried to set appointments. But until recently, the computer system wouldn't even allow her to schedule an appointment with them on their calendar. But when she arrived at the office, it was the same situation as before. The office manager called for the police because I wasn't going to leave. I was there for a scheduled appointment, Barton said. I was not going to be bullied into leaving. In addition to spinal stenosis, Barton has a painful cyst about the size of a grapefruit on behind her knee that must be removed. She also suffers from diabetes, high blood pressure, and kidney disease, and she has a pacemaker. Before she was banned in February, Barton had been seeing the same group of physicians for over 40 years. So, Congressman, my question is, when will the pandemic submission threats and demands across America end, in your opinion? When will it end? With a patient like this, 62 years old, what is she to do if she cannot wear a mask? How is she to get medical care? And that's not just in Pennsylvania. That's across America, and it is here in the state of Florida, with every one of the medical offices, medical professionals, healthcare professionals still holding the COVID-19 restrictions and demanding that you submit to their request or their demands, or you cannot see the doctor, are threatened with law enforcement coming into you to see in the waiting room to see you. How should we respond? What's your thoughts? What can be done from a legislative standpoint, in your most humble opinion?
Well, first of all, Dr. Youngblood, there were so many outrageous things that you described in that article that were taking place.
Yes.
Particularly from the police department, who would handcuff behind her back a 62-year-old woman and then would take a turn on a corner so sharp that she would fall over. Utterly unbelievable. And now I will have to say this, that the doctor is a private practice, and if that is what this private business wants to do, he certainly has the right to do that, to require that someone wear a mask. But he should not, in this case, knowing that this lady, first of all, has trauma from wearing a mask and cannot, should not have required that of her. And then, especially since we know data has shown us, and I don't know why the doctors are ignoring this, why the medical profession is ignoring this, is that the masks do not work in preventing the transmission of the COVID virus. And we learned just recently from Dr. Birx that she knew that the vaccine would not stop spreading of the virus. And simultaneously encouraging everyone to get the virus, along with Dr. Fauci, who is still encouraging people to get vaccinated and boosted and to wear a mask. It's insane what we see going on right now, Dr. Youngblood, and the whole idea is to keep that fear going and to continue control over the population. I think that this lady should have a lawsuit ready to go against this doctor. What can state legislators do? Well, we know here in Florida that Governor DeSantis announced that there would be no mask mandates or vaccine mandates issued from the government level. In other words, no county, city, or principality government cannot require masks or vaccines. Now, if a private business wants to, that's a little different. But unfortunately, this lady in there in Pennsylvania doesn't have the option, it sounds like, of going to other doctors for her treatment. And it's also outrageous that she can't even get her prescriptions filled for her medication. As I say, so many wrong things happening there, Dr. Youngblood.
It's egregious to see this. And one of the things that, again, I go back to the fact that this permeates society today. I know from personal experience, the physicians, medical associations, hospitals, everything to do with your medical care, even to go into a lab to get a blood test, you've got to don a mask or you're not allowed to come in. Now, one of the things, Congressman Hill, that I have discovered in research is that these physicians, medical centers, and the hospitals still receive compensation from the CARES Act as long as they keep enforcing the mask requirement. It's a money-based decision, not a health-based decision, that this is being carried out. It seems to me that that is egregious and flies in the face of Americans' freedoms for our health care and for the administration of the health care process. And as you stated just a moment ago, you touched on it. I'm looking at an article. Dr. Deborah Birx admits that she deceived President Trump to push the COVID measures. Dr. Deborah Birx, who served as the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator under President Donald Trump, has admitted in her new book that she manipulated the data and quietly altered the CDC guidelines without any knowledge or observation or authorization. In the book, Silent Invasion, she confesses she deceived a strategic sleight-of-hand method of reporting she described as subterfuge. She admits it's subterfuge on the face of it. This article further says, Dr. Birx opposed the advice of then-coordinator coronavirus advisor Dr. Scott Atlas to limit testing on the premise that asymptomatic transmission was minimal and not driving the pandemic. She and then-CDC Director Robert Redfield agreed to quietly rewrite the guidelines and post it on the CDC website. We would not seek any approval, she said, because we were both quite busy, and it might take a week or two to get that done, but we were committed to subverting, her words, committed to subverting the dangerous message that limiting testing was the right thing to do. Dr. Birx recalls a phone call from the White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, who said, what the blank are you doing? You rewrote and posted CDC testing stuff, said Meadows. According to Dr. Birx's account, yes, I did, end quote. So, Congressman, my point is that if we have people in the high position in American medicine that's making the decisions to simply ignore anything that we'll call science data, and all of these Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci and others keep saying, we're going by the data. Well, if the data is a juxtaposition of individual fiat decision-making, how are we to understand what to do in the future? And I say that, Congressman, because we're on the very cusp, on the very edge of President Joe Biden declaring a national health emergency for monkeypox. Dr. Tedros of the World Health Organization has already declared a global health emergency. And according to the articles that I have before me, the article says President Biden readies to declare a public health emergency due to monkeypox. So I'm concerned twofold, Congressman, with the fact that we've been lied to and lied to and lied to and lied to some more for 2+ years about the COVID plandemic. And we were lied to about the vaccination, that it does not stop the transmission of the disease. It does not stop the illness of COVID. And yet we were told that it would. And now we're told that you need to be shot, have one shot, two shots, then you need to be boosted, and boosted again. And 91% of those going into the hospital with COVID have already been vaccinated and boosted. So that should tell us that the vaccinations are worthless. What are your thoughts as to the rationale behind a continual push for the American citizens to be vaccinated And yet that push to be vaccinated is not found at the borders with, we're told, over 2.5 million illegals having already come in. They're not vaccinated. They're not forced to be vaccinated. And yet we, the people, the citizens, are. What are your thoughts? What is your vantage point, viewpoint on what we should be concerned about at this time?
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Youngblood, it makes every citizen very unsure of our healthcare system. How can you trust them now when you see for the past 2 years how they have lied to us consistently? How can you trust the CDC? How can you trust the World Health Organization, which, by the way, we should be out of that anyway,
yes.
Part of the United
yes.
Nations, and yes. we should be out of the United Nations, and we should get the United Nations out of the U.S. Get them out of New York. Take your headquarters to Brussels or wherever else you want to go, but you should not be in the United States. So there's a great mistrust of our healthcare system right now based on what we have seen over the past 2 years. And so what that forces us to do, Dr. Youngblood, and this is a good thing, it forces us to, instead of relying on pills and shots and vaccines and so forth, we should rely on our own natural immunity, and that is by eating well, exercising, and taking care of ourselves instead of being pumped with these vaccines that don't even work. In fact, they shouldn't even be called vaccines.
That's right.
It's a jab that they're putting in your arm. And by the way, I think I read just yesterday that Joe Biden, his COVID is still lingering, that he's had now for over a week. And they say that he's been jabbed and boosted, even though I doubt if he actually ever really did. And by the way, Dr. Youngblood, you know, those who were excluded from having to have the jab were Congress people and their staff, their aides. They did not have to get the jab if they did not want to, even though they were telling the rest of the country to do it. And the motive behind all of this is money, Dr. Youngblood. Those pharmaceutical companies have made billions, tens of billions, in just the past 2 years. And that's why they are continuing this non-scientific nonsense of jabbing everyone who walks.
Congressman Hill, I've got a question, and it's just my pondering thoughts. I understand that from the standpoint of a private business, and doctors' offices and hospitals are considered that, that the law does not apply where there's in the state of Florida, that no mask mandate, no enforcement of taking the jab. But I'm concerned that with those entities, healthcare industries, the healthcare businesses, if you will, hospitals, doctors, and other healthcare associations, even though they're independent, if it interferes with the rights and the freedoms of the citizens, if it interferes with the opportunity to have medical care, it seems to me, and I know I'm fishing, it seems to me that there should be some apparatus by which the law, by legislative action, could change that. For example, Senate Bill 988 was introduced and passed, which makes it a requirement for the healthcare industry, the doctors and the hospitals, to allow family members and clergy to go in and visit those in the hospital that are there because of COVID, and if they are required to put on a mask or a gown, as the doctors would in that situation, that they cannot refuse a family member or a clergy or someone going in to visit that patient. Now, that's in law today. However, it does have a caveat that the hospitals and the doctors, as long as they post it on the website in advance, 30 days in advance of any changes, modifications, or requirements, that they can still do so. That seems to me as a huge, huge loophole, and it's my most humble opinion that careful critical examination of what is now law, Senate Bill 988, that could be tweaked very easily and put it into position that if a person's health will not allow them to wear a mask, or if their general practitioner says that they can't wear a mask, or if there's the fact that the 146 studies on mask says that masks do not prevent the transmission or the receiving of a pathogen, it seems to me that law can be tweaked so that it protects the citizens, that we're not forced to put a mask on to walk into a doctor's office or to walk in to get medical care, even to go into a lab to have a lab test made. What are your thoughts? Is that worth examining? Is that worth chasing that rabbit to see if that can be done?
Oh, I think so, yes, Dr. Youngblood. No, and as you were speaking, a thought came to me where, again, this whole thing seems to be about money.
Yes.
And most doctors and most hospitals receive some form of government funding. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, that puts them under the auspices of being able to be regulated by the government and how they perform. Not so much, let's say, a private business that is selling shoes or something like that. They receive no government funding.
Yes.
But hospitals and doctors do. So because of that, and also hospitals cannot refuse to see someone who is unable to pay for their attention, their medical care. They must accept those patients. And that's why people go to emergency rooms all the time. And they receive funding for that. It's called the low income pool, or LIP, and they receive funding from the state and from the federal government to pay for that. So because they have those provisions in place, they are regulated by the government and they receive funding from the government, then the government can, in my opinion, dictate what they can and cannot do, such as those mask mandates. So I walk back what I said previously, them being a private business. They're private, but they receive a lot of government funding. They're very heavily regulated by the government. And I think that loophole that was placed in that bill, where it says given 30 days notice, then they can do it, is so typical of what you see coming out of government, even coming out of Tallahassee.
Yes.
That to get that legislation passed, they had to put that nonsensical loophole that basically guts the entire bill right there.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. And I'll say, if I can jump in for a moment, Congressman Hill, and say this: when that was being written, I spoke to each of our DeVol delegation about that, made some calls to legislators about that, Representative Sabatini and others, and worked up the wording, which was only about four sentences, that needed to be changed in that bill to make it have teeth in it, that it would be beneficial to the public, and it was still left out. And the reason it was left out, as I understand it from Senator Bean, was that because the hospitals thought that would be too restrictive for them, and they couldn't live with it. Well, that's the whole point now. There's not restrictions on them, hospitals and doctors and the medical association, that I believe is causing major, major, major health declension for American citizens as a result of that. So, it's my rattling thoughts that I believe there needs to be something done to protect Americans, and especially Floridians, in relationship to that bill, that I believe could be tweaked and make some major, major changes. There are a couple other things. By the way, if you wanted to add some comments to that or some thoughts, go ahead.
No, I agree with you completely, Dr. Youngblood, and I appreciate you as a citizen stepping forward in that political process to try and make that bill better. And it just was a sign, I believe, of weakness and cowardice that they would bow to the medical profession and say, well, they didn't agree to it. Well, okay. But we are here to protect citizens,
yes,
not the hospitals.
Absolutely. That was my thoughts exactly. Let's switch gears for the last few minutes that we have. Let me ask you a question. Perhaps you're familiar with the case that's taking place down in South Florida. It's down in Dunedin, the city of Dunedin. Reading a headline says, city fines an elderly man $30,000 over uncut grass and tries to steal his home. It's an elongated, I've got three or four different articles on that. The bottom line is the man had his mother passed away. She was in the Northeast. He was gone for 4 weeks. He left his normal landscaper, lawn care person in charge to keep his grass cut. Unknown to him, the lawn care man died, and so therefore the man was gone 4 weeks, comes back, and finds a handful of tickets been plastered on his door by the code enforcement department, and it accumulated just in that period of time $30,000, just under pennies, under $30,000 for tall grass. They started the foreclosure process on his home, and the federal court upholds the $30,000 fine. This article says a federal court upholds the $30,000 fine against a Florida man for not cutting his grass. The case could go as high as the Supreme Court. How tall should grass get before a person loses his home? What can be done from a legislative standpoint? There is a Florida statute. I'm familiar with it locally in Duval County. There is a Florida statute that is a state statute that allows municipalities, cities, and counties to enforce code enforcement. If your grass is too tall, ticket you on that, etc. Give you an example, and then I'll turn it to you. Back about 3 years ago, we had a physician here in the city that donated a house to our church to be sold. The house was worth about $50,000 at most. The most value there was the lot, but there was almost $1 million worth of fines from code enforcement on it. We went through 9 months of dealing with the chief attorney for the city, dealing with the city councilman, dealing with every legislative branch in our city, including the CFO for the city, to finally get most of those removed. But their excuse was, it's a state statute. We must follow the state statute, and we must do this. And in Duval County, and based on this and other counties, properties are being stolen because somebody cannot afford or cannot are not available to get the grass cut. Should a person lose his home because the grass is too tall?
No, that's ridiculous, Dr. Youngblood. I can see where they would want to make your area beautiful, you know, grass being cut and so forth, but to put outrageous fines like that and then a lien on the home, if you'd actually lose it, that's just going way too far. The government has become too controlling. The government is supposed to be there to serve the people.
Yes.
Not to have the people subservient to them and taking their homes away. That's just outrageous, and that needs to stop.
Absolutely.
I would like to look into that Florida statute and see what can be done to prevent that from happening, of going through the entire process of a person losing their homes and outrageous fines being placed on it because they didn't cut their grass.
Amen. We've got about 20 seconds, Congressman. Give our listeners information of how to reach you and an invitation for them to assist you in this election cycle.
Thank you, Dr. Youngblood, and I'm so encouraged. The last time I was on your show, I've actually received contributions from some of your listeners.
Amen.
And some have made large contributions, and I'm very grateful for that. And they can go to MikeHillForFlorida.com. That's MikeHill, F-O-R, Florida. com. Learn more about me. Click on that contribute button and help me with my campaign. And I thank you so much for your and your listeners' prayers, Dr. Youngblood.
Amen.
I'm very encouraged by how the campaign is being perceived and progressing as we speak.
Amen. Congressman Hill, thank you so much for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
CU is now enrolling students for next semester. Ask about first semester scholarships. Call 1-800-GO-BIBLE.